ever have problems getting to sleep? Or maybe you wake up in those still small hours and stay awake. That makes some of us quite anxious and others just enjoy the peace and quiet. But if you do want to get back to sleep, how about a bedtime story? We usually finish with them in childhood, don't we? The kind of comforting storytelling our parents might have done. But Catherine Nicolai says it still works for many, many people. She's a US-based storyteller and yoga teacher who's turned her enduring love of comforting stories into a hit podcast and now a book called Nothing Much Happens. Here's a taste of one of her lovely pieces. It's called The Labyrinth.
In the gardens of the big house, on the far side of an open meadow, where deer have worn narrow trails through the grass, there is a stone wall that was built when our great-grandparents were children. And often when I am out there, my shoes damp with dew on a summer morning, I feel like it's possible to slip through time. I look across the meadow and watch purple cone flowers bobbing in the wind and listen to whippoorwills and mourning doves layering their calls one over the other.
She's been called an architect of coziness, and you can see why. Catherine Nicolai, thanks for joining us on Life Matters.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's go way, way back to start with and into childhood. What role did bedtime stories play for you?
They are some of my earliest memories. And while my parents definitely read me bedtime stories, from the time I was probably 4 years old, I learned to tell myself stories. So when I would get in bed at night and pull the blanket over my shoulder, close my eyes, I would take myself places in my mind. And it would always put me to sleep. And I never lost the habit as an adult. So I've always had this sort of secret superpower that I can fall asleep and I can go back to sleep if I wake in the middle of the night, all through bedtime stories.
It is a superpower. I think there are people who would grab that rock of kryptonite by any means necessary if they could.
And especially in 2020.
Exactly, yes. When you grew up in Flint in Michigan, which people might remember from Michael Moore's films,
yes.
And you said that it wasn't a particularly peaceful place. What do you remember about what it felt like living there at that time?
You know, we hear about Flint in the news these days. I don't know how aware y'all are down in Australia, but because of the lead in the water, which is still true and has endangered a lot of the city. But it wasn't a particularly easy place to live in the 80s. It was a very violent city. And, you know, you might hear gunshots and stuff at night. And I'm sure that part of this habit that I adopted came out of adaptation, out of a need to make myself feel safe and cozy and take my mind someplace where I could find some rest. So I think growing up in Flint kind of made me the right person to learn how to tell these stories.
And narrative does give you that lovely sense of control and completion, doesn't it? Things progress.
It does.
And there might be risk, but it's resolved at the end. As a small child, what kind of stories did you pick to do that for you?
Mine were a bit more exciting than the ones I tell to grown-ups now. They usually sort of had that gothic swing of everything going terribly wrong to only come all right in the end. There were a couple of books that I used to read and listen to myself as a child that followed that pattern, and I always adopted them. Now as an adult, you know, I tell stories about going for walks and making a pot of soup and the kind of things that I think adults find quite comforting.
They are comforting. They're little jewels, little tiny self-contained little experiences of daily life.
Yeah.
Catherine, I'm wondering though, when you were a kid, did reading books have the same impact, or was it the spoken word that did it for you?
I really reacted to the spoken word, and I have a condition called aphantasia, which means that I am unable to visualize anything. I can't create spontaneous or any kind of image in my mind. And I didn't know that, of course, when I was a child, but I look back on it now and realize how much I reacted to spoken word experiences when I was a kid. I remember the very first audiobook my dad ever got from me from the library, and he probably had to go back and check it out every month for the whole summer because I wouldn't stop listening to it. So I think from a very young age, that feeling of being read to has always captured my imagination.
And the aphantasia is really interesting, isn't it? You've written about how it can be actually a really useful thing, particularly for storytelling, but also has its heartbreaking moments too.
It can be rough. You know, the first time I sort of explained it to my wife and said, you know, that I can't picture my face. I can't picture any face. And she said, not even mine. I felt awful to say, no, my dear, not even your face. But, you know, I think it does make me very present. I really just live with what my senses show me moment to moment. And I think that in some ways that's taught me to invest a little bit more in other sensory details. And the stories that I tell are always really rich in sensory details. I like to lean into the way things feel or smell or taste. That sort of comes from my mindfulness training as well as a yoga teacher. But I think it helps make the moment really engaging and allows you to sink into it. It's not overly exciting. It's not going to keep you awake, but it makes you feel like it's kind of wrapped around you like a blanket.
Yep. You feel good and then you fall asleep is the tagline.
That's
on the podcast.
Idea.
Oh,
yep.
So lovely. My favorite's the one where you go into a spice shop and you describe the layers of spices going down through the depth into the chilies at the bottom with their little spark.
Yeah, I loved writing that story.
I find the aphantasia really interesting, Catherine Nicolai, because you talk about how what it means on a practical day-to-day level, like when your wife said, you know, what colour kitchen cabinets do you want? And your thought was, is she asking me to be psychic? I don't understand. Because a lot of people who don't have it wouldn't really understand the difference in the ways that people think who have this condition.
Yeah, and it, you know, learning more about it kind of made me have some of those aha moments. There is sort of a spectrum. Some people are super visualizers and they can visualize things in great detail and over, you know, long distances. I have a friend who lives in Paris who I haven't seen in 15 years. And when I told her about it, she said, I can remember how your eyebrows looked when you were 16 years old, which is a super visualizer. And she's a graphic artist. It kind of makes sense. We always tend to think of our experience must be everyone's, but we're learning more that there's the spectrum of experiences for people and the way that their brains work.
And that's something that struck me about the stories too, that they're full of these little details. They're all about noticing small things about the weather or the materials that we're surrounded by or parts of the natural world, but also little moments of gratitude and hope and moments you can reset how you're feeling. Is that a deliberate thing?
Absolutely. And it's something I've deliberately built into my own psyche. I don't think I came by it naturally, but sort of part of the training that I go through to be a yoga teacher is to pay attention to these small moments and to glean whatever appreciation or gratitude I can from them in the moment. And I notice that once you start to prime that pump of looking for something to appreciate, your cup runneth over. You start to see things everywhere. There are all these little moments during your day where if you weren't mindful, if you weren't paying attention, you might miss out on them. But once you start to look for them, you see them everywhere. And it can really shift your mood. It can shift your perspective day to day. And while my goal is always that the story help you fall asleep, I am planting these little secret seeds of mindfulness so that during the day, maybe you're more awake to the world you're walking in, awake to these moments that can bring you, even if it's just a very small seed of joy from ordinary magic.
But it's very different from the lives that most of us lead, isn't it? It's such a slow way of listening to the world and looking at the world. And it's such a stark contrast to maybe what people's lives are like until the moment they get into bed.
Yeah. And I think, you know, most of us are rushing all day long and already onto the next thing in our minds, even if our bodies aren't there. We're driving to work and we're already thinking about three steps ahead of that, what's going to happen. So it's so easy for, you know, the small things to slip through our fingers. But in the end, most of our lives are not made up of big moments. You know, you might have a handful at the end of your life of the birth of a child or falling in love or getting married, but most of our lives are made up of these really small, simple moments. So I feel like investing in those moments can actually shift your whole quality of life because it's what most of your life is. So if in the morning when you're waiting for the water to boil for your tea or you're stepping outside with your dogs, if you just can catch a second to breathe in the fresh air or notice the smell of the tea as it brews. It might just be 1% more joy in your day, but it's cumulative. It adds up.
1% more joy. I'll take it. We're speaking with Catherine Nicolai, podcaster and author. The book and the podcast are both called Nothing Much Happens. But as you're hearing, that's only on the surface. Underneath, there's a lot going on. And Catherine, your podcast has been very successful. Has it surprised you that so many other adults want to go to sleep to a bedtime story?
You know, I didn't know what to expect when I put it out there. I thought for sure that it could help people if I could get it in front of them. And I think the fact that it spread so quickly and, you know, now we're over 25 million downloads, it shows the great need for it and how universal it is. When we were first talking about the book with the various publishers, and they would say, well, who's the prospective audience? And I'd say, I mean, does it sound silly if I say everyone? You know, everyone at some point is going to experience insomnia, sleeplessness, anxiety. And this was even before 2020 happened, and we didn't know how much that was going to be ratcheted up. So I think now I'm not surprised at how many people need assistance sleeping. The thing I didn't see coming was how many people would also use the stories to moderate anxiety, to help them deal with PTSD, to be with them in difficult moments. I hear from people who listen while they're getting their chemo treatments, while they're in these moments where they're, if they let their mind wander, it would go someplace pretty scary. And the stories become this grounding point for them that they can stay with, stay calm. And I'm so grateful to be able to offer that to people.
Have you noticed that you've got more downloads during the last 6 months or so?
Yes, it has gone up a bit. I think even for so many of us being in our homes, we might have thought, well, you know, I'm not going to work. I can get to bed early, but certainly all the anxiety of the world, we're feeling it.
It's interesting, though. A lot of people have been saying to me that even if, depending, you know, sometimes they're in a stressed state, sometimes they're not so stressed, but they're all saying that they're noticing more things. They're noticing the little things, and their attention rests on things around their house or in their garden or on their daily walks a lot more than it used to.
And that's I think maybe one of those silver linings of everybody having a little a chance where we got forcibly slowed down. Because I've been hearing that from people too, that, you know, after a few months in their house, they're noticing the birds outside. They're paying more attention to these small moments. I think we got stopped by nature, and that's maybe not a bad thing.
Yep. And if you've got some nature around you, that can be a wonderful healing place. Catherine Nicolai, in the book, you've collected a lot of these stories together, and you've got some advice on how we can use the stories, not just to send ourselves to sleep, but maybe to go back to sleep too, if we wake up and the mind and the heart starts to race. What should we do?
Yeah, so this is, again, a tested and true technique from me, and I've heard from many listeners who've said the same thing. In that moment when you're suddenly awake again, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, there's a tendency for the mind to switch back on. And the more you let that wheel start cranking, the trickier it's going to be to go back to sleep. So you need to right away reroute yourself back into the narrative. And, you know, you could certainly turn on the podcast, you could certainly click on the light and read more of the story. But the nice thing about it is that as you read those stories, you start to accumulate sort of this file drawer of safe places, of cozy experiences. And so you right away take yourself into one of those places. And my own tendency first is I'll say the name of the story. For example, there's a story in the book called A Block from Home. It was the first one I ever wrote. And it was one that I told myself in my head for many years. And it's basically just about coming home at the end of a rainy day and locking all the doors and being safe inside your house. And so when my mind turns back on, I'll say to myself, a block from home. And it's sort of the signal that we're not going to go into the crazy monkey mind. We're going to go into the story. And then I think my way through the details, coming home, turning my collar up against the rain, putting my key in the lock, shutting the door behind me. And usually within a few seconds, I drop right back off. And I knew that that would work, had always worked for me. I'm so grateful to hear from so many listeners who said they'd never heard of it before, but it works for them too. We have to reroute the mind before it gets too much momentum behind it.
I'm really glad too that lots of other people are finding that extra 1% of joy on a daily basis. Catherine, it's been lovely to chat to you. Thanks for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Catherine Nicolai, podcaster and author, and the podcast and the book are both called Nothing Much Happens.